Welcome to Skin Deep. I'm Dr. Anna Chacon, and today we have a very special guest joining us. Get ready for some expert insights you won't want to miss. Let's dive right in.
So tell me, so your dad had a jet ski business?
Right. So I'll start from the top. How about that?
Yeah.
I'll start from the top. So yeah, I'm Christy Swade. My racing name was Christy Carlson. I was born in Chicago and raised in Chicago, but my father opened jet ski rentals all over Southwest Florida when I was in the 70s. I was like 7 years old the first time I got on a jet ski. And whenever we visited our dad, my brothers and I have two older brothers, the rule was keep up or get left behind. So I either played by myself independently, or I was going 90 to nothing on everything fun, but namely jet skis. And then, funny enough, it became my career path very unexpectedly. The sport exploded in the late 80s, early 90s. We were on ESPN with ratings that competed with summer baseball. And all of that leveraged lots of great endorsements and turned it into a really exciting career.
Okay, great. How many years have you been doing this on a professional level, or how many years did you do it?
So funny enough, I started racing at age 13, and I was just in school in Chicago, a suburb. And when it became more professional, I had to graduate high school early to go on the national tour, which started in California and worked its way across the nation. And then in the off season, we traveled all over the world. So I started professionally in 1989. I was 18 years old, and it forced me to move from Chicago away from my family and everything familiar and get based in LA. But we traveled, like I said, I lived out of a suitcase. We traveled all over to ride rivers, lakes, oceans, waves, you name it, we rode it.
Wow. Did you ever see any like animals that maybe you were afraid of? Manta rays or sharks?
Great white sharks. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I have been stung by man of war. I've seen manta ray jump out of the water next to me. I mean, I can't even tell you the hours on the water. I mean, it was a lifetime in the water, and I've seen it all, and it's magnificent. Every single living creature, scary or not, is magnificent.
Wow, cool. And what was some of the hardest jet ski environment that you were in? Like you mentioned about lakes, and were you in rivers and stuff like that? Or did you stumble upon rocks or anything in the ocean? Yeah.
You can Google this. I've got three thoughts just crashed into my awareness. I'll start with the first. South Africa, huge waves off of the coast of Durban, and then also there's this string of buoys that I was kind of warming up and just carving corners around. And it turned out those are shark nets, and that's very great white territory. So that was interesting. Big waves, ferocious. Then as far as rivers go, I did a show on the Outdoor Channel, and it was called The Wild River Journey. And we actually rode bottom to top, which had never been done. The story was that for hundreds of years, voyagers traveled from top to bottom. And this is in the New River Gorge in West Virginia, one of the, you know, like class five rapids. But can a vessel get from bottom to top? So the only vessel that could potentially do it would be something that could travel in shallow water at high speed, which left it to a jet ski. So they picked the top men and women. Well, I was the only woman chosen to do this journey. And yes, we rode from bottom to top. We ripped the bottoms out of the skis by slamming into rocks and boulders. And but we did it, and it was super cool. And if you Googled Wild River Journey on the New River Gorge jet ski, Christy Carlson, you'll probably find it somewhere on the internet.
Okay, cool. And then I'm not familiar with where jet skis are made out of, where they're made. Is there a particular manufacturer or Are they made in the United States, China, Europe, Japan? Where's this jet ski industry usually come from?
So I freely use the word jet ski, which is a brand name because I was sponsored by Kawasaki for so many years. In fact, I was told that I bleed green. That's their team colors. However, I did at some point have to race a Yamaha and a Polaris. So let's put that in perspective. The sport is called personal watercraft racing. The very first jet ski ever invented was invented by Kawasaki. And that's what I started on, and that's flows right off the tip of my tongue so easily. But there are several manufacturers, and you probably have heard of Sea-Doo. Like, people think of a sit-down watercraft as a Sea-Doo. They often associate that. Well, in fact, Kawasaki has a jet ski version of a sit-down watercraft. Gets a little complicated, but the ones I'm referring to are the stand-up watercraft, which are much more challenging. I did race all the types of hulls that are out there, because that was my job. And they like to run what they marketed and what they sold the most of. The original question is, where are they made? Well, Kawasaki is originally made in Japan, but I'm pretty sure manufacturing all happens in America.
Okay, cool. And then I'm just curious. I heard your husband is a neurosurgeon. Is that true?
Yes.
Where did you guys meet? Because it seems like, and it's great, you do two completely different things.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how you met. Yeah.
He's an extreme sport all in and of himself. We're told that we're like two train tracks going in pair. We're separate but very parallel. So, he takes what he does to the ultimate highest level. He's clipped aneurysms that no one wanted to touch. He's done, cases that have really set him apart among neurosurgeons. He's what I would call a top gun, and his personality type is very exciting because he's a risk taker, but not in the area of safety. So I tend to challenge the his capacity for tolerance of safety issues.
Yeah, I'm sure you've probably heard of people getting into accidents on jet skis. I think I've even heard of that, even though it's not my area of medicine. I'm a dermatologist. But what are some of the accidents or safety precautions? What are some of the accidents that you've heard of on jet skis that terrified you or made you think twice about, what you do? And then what are some precautions you would give the general public and to avoid these things?
I really appreciate the question. That's a very important question. In fact, much of my career was dedicated to the topic. As a faith believer in Jesus, I always know that I have a calling to care about a greater good. And while racing, it was that the horrible accidents that happened so fast involving jet skis are tragic. I mean, I'm not going to water that down as much as I hate the subject, but it's real. When you jump on a watercraft that goes 60 miles an hour in 2 seconds flat, it steers like a bicycle, and people just find themselves way over their head and don't notice that there's traffic around them. That's when really bad things happen really fast. So I got certified in marine safety on all levels with the Coast Guard Auxiliary and dedicated to boating safety education. So if I could do a PSA shout out, I would love everyone to get their boater's license because you don't know what you don't know. And tragedy happens fast while you're just trying to have a good time. And if you don't have time to do that before you get on a jet ski for your first ride, just have awareness skills, 360 degrees. Look all around all the time. Another vessel could be coming around the corner and they're going 60 miles an hour. And, just please look before you turn. You can never look too much and don't go faster than you're comfortable. Work your way toward that, even though you can. There's this whole thing I live by, can versus should. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. So think, look, use some self-control.
Okay, great. Excellent. And then the other thing I was curious about is females in the jet ski industry. I didn't really think it was is it a female friendly sport, or there's a lot of are there a lot of women in jet skiing? Because I definitely know a lot of guys that love jet skiing, but not a lot of women. I've been on a jet ski before, but yeah, just being a female figure in this, what I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but male dominated, it's kind of mostly men, air water sport.
Yeah, you just read my mind. That was what I was going to say, is definitely male dominated. In fact, when I first was sponsored by the leading wetsuit company at the time, it was called Jet Pilot. They didn't even make a wetsuit for women. I had to wear a boy's wetsuit the first year of my of racing. And so I was fortunate though, to actually kind of launch a brand and a women's line that took off. So today, women love racing jet skis and they have a presence. And I was happy to be part of, spearheading that reality.
That's wonderful. That's excellent. And what do people wear on jet skis? What do they wear when they're racing? Living in South Florida, I'm used to people wearing almost anything, but in the professional world, and what is it? What are people most comfortable in? And do they wear hats, helmets, things like that, body suits,
Yeah.
shoes?
And being that we're talking about skin deep, which I really appreciate your commitment to your craft, which is dermatology, I would say I got away with a lot because I had to wear a helmet. I think that saved my skin so much trauma, not just sun, but also wind and spray. So yes, to your question, I even to this day like to wear a wetsuit just because I do go fast and I do, take turns where I bounce off the water. So it prevents a lot of bruises and things like that on my legs. So I like a full wetsuit depending on the temperature or, but I do think like neoprene shorts over a bathing suit. Definitely always wear your life jacket. You can get ejected without warning, and it's really important to have your life jacket. It's also legal, illegal not to wear a life jacket. If you're going to burn laps with other riders, wear a helmet. I require helmets whenever I race or ride with other riders. And I really like throwing out a track because a track gets people going in the same direction. And you can make it technical, so it's incredible. It's an incredible physical workout. So picture every corner you're pulling on the handlebars, you're pushing forward, you're carving, you're in a deep knee bend. You're literally firing every muscle in your whole body, the whole way around. And you don't even think you're working out because you're having so much fun.
Cool, excellent. And then, all right. Do you still jet ski?
Oh yeah. In fact, I took a challenge this year, 2024, at age 53. I just turned 54 a couple of days ago and broke a world record. Wow, I can't even believe it still. I knocked off a backflip that ended up being just short of 16 feet up
Wow.
and backwards and upside down. And
Oh my
yeah,
God.
that was pretty exciting.
Was that
My
planned, or
husband.
did it was a planned backflip?
It was an invitation that I didn't really get to prepare for other than to study YouTube videos. It's a modern trick that was not able to be performed when I was in the mix of things. And today, to do that trick, you have to have a really specialized custom watercraft. And it turned out that there was a rider in Alabama that had one of those skis and invited me to give it a try. And I just couldn't say no. Of course, my husband was not pleased. It did land me in the hospital, but it was
Whoa.
absolutely worth it.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you made it. You look great. And then, how many jet skis do you personally have? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I want more, but I have all my old ones are vintage. They're absolutely beautiful and they're art pieces at this point, but they don't run. They're two-stroke engines that would burn on fully leaded high octane race fuel, which is like the best smell in the world. Have you ever smelled high octane race fuel?
Probably not. No.
I need to bottle it. I think it would make a great, like, I don't know, fragrance. But anyway, yeah, that would not be environmentally friendly anymore. So those skis are retired. But my modern ski is a Kawasaki, and it runs on, pump fuel, and it's very low maintenance. Before, when I was racing, I had a team of mechanics that would handle all that stuff for me. So I know basic stuff, but not enough to keep the vintage skis going. But I do have a stand-up and a sit-down, a three-seater, and I pull my boys behind it on wakeboards and tubes. And, with those two skis, we can have a lot of fun, a good afternoon.
Okay, cool. And would you consider, I'm just curious because you have, I'm sure you have a lot of stuff, like your vintage skis and I'm sure some vintage clothing, that you skied with. Would you consider having like a museum or, what are you planning on do or showcasing some of these items later on?
Well, I'm presently inducted in the Watercraft Hall of Fame, which is located in Lake Havasu City, Arizona. And a lot of those things are on display there, and were donated for that purpose. I had a lot of things that my mother stored in her basement over the years, and then she passed away, and I acquired all this stuff that I didn't know what to do with. So it came to my attention that my stuff might be valuable. So we threw it online and sold $75,000 worth of my stuff that I thought was just going to go to the dumpster. And all the money went to my nonprofit, HEAL. HEAL stands for Healthy Eating, Active Living. And it's a 501c3 I founded 20 years ago. And it's called HEAL United today because it's grown much bigger than what we originally started off as an experiment in one school to convert PE into a measurable health and wellness experience for children. And it's inclusive of all children, no matter their fitness level or disability or need for special inclusion. That's what I love so much about it. Everyone's included and everyone benefits. And today we serve 75,000 kids across the state of Alabama through that nonprofit. And actually, at the same time, we sold $75,000 worth of my vintage stuff that went directly to the cause.
That's awesome. That's excellent. Yeah, I did see that. I was going to ask you about that when I looked you up online. That's one of the first things that came out, the heel. So that's very, very cool.
Thank
And
you.
so you're in Chicago now. You have roots in Chicago, Southwest Florida, Alabama too, and you race a lot in California. Where
Yeah.
would you say your roots lie? Or where do you live
Well,
modern day, and where are most of your roots?
yeah, so Chicago is for sure like where I was born and where I finished through all my school through high school. And then right after that, went straight into professional racing out in California. Now, my parents split up when I was five. So when my dad moved to Florida and started the jet ski rentals, that was summertime home. So I kind of like living in the military. I guess I was bounced around a lot, but based in LA, but lived out of a gear bag. So we traveled somewhere every weekend, short of a couple of months of the year. And I did film and television stunts, and I had an agent. So you really have to be there to do those things. But then I met my husband at the Atlanta Super Show, signing autographs for a company called VersaClimber, as well as Heart Rate Incorporated. I was representing fitness equipment and heart rate technology. And that's how I met my husband. He was cruising the show And on all my posters, I always put a scripture. I love reading the Bible, and there's actually racing references in the Bible. And there's one called 1 Corinthians 9:24 that says, "In a race, all the runners run, but run the race as if to win the prize." So it really challenges the mindset of how to go about living life. And I mentioned earlier in the podcast today that I always am mindful of a greater good. So after my husband and I dated long distance, Los Angeles, he's from Alabama, so that's how I ended up in Alabama. We dated long distance for 2.5 years. Then we decided we're going to get married. So that meant retirement for me. And I retired, near age 30. I was ready to have a family. I wanted children. So I hung up the helmet and moved to Alabama and started, life all over again. It was a total place of reinvention. So, like, the things I was really good at held no value. Like, burning a fast corner around a buoy really wasn't going to help put good meals on the dinner table. So I started cooking lessons, trying to be good at this thing called domestic living. And it was a new, a new frontier. Then I was blessed to get pregnant, and I've got two boys that are the center of my universe who are now in college. So I'm very mindful of that age group and their needs. And so while sitting in Alabama, I thought, what's the greater good purpose for me here? And that became HEAL United, the 501c3 that I started. My mind was on children, and I just thought, wow, one out of three in the South are living with obesity. And that's just one chronic disease of a plethora of preventable diseases that if children embraced basic healthy eating and active living behaviors, and now we add in their sleep patterns, device control patterns, there's so much more now. And mental health is a tremendous focus and problem, a rising crisis that we're putting a lot of emphasis on right now. So that's my passion, that's my purpose, my greater good, that was developed by living in Alabama, which has been sweet home over 20 years now. I've been married like 24 years now, so.
Wow, that's awesome. And other so yeah, that's actually a pretty young age to retire. But I could imagine that that might be common in the jet ski business or industry, retiring in your 30s. Is that kind of what you starting young and kind of do you observe that a lot?
Well, I think any extreme sport that really beats your body, 30 is not really a young retirement. For that kind of abuse. However, I would say I definitely had I had a lot left in me. I still do. But the nature of film and television stunts and racing was full time, but then that tapered down, and then film and television and commercials became a higher priority and a better revenue stream, secure with Screen Actors Guild health insurance and all of that. But you really can't be successful in that industry if you're not living it day in and day out. And you have to just be there. You have to show up for auditions, and then show up for the jobs. Otherwise, it dries up very quickly. So, I just thought, I'd rather end gracefully, stop on top and pivot. And now, after all these years, my boys are in college, like I mentioned. I'm revisiting some of my past for the first time in over 20 years, which is why I started Checkered Flag Living. Is I'm kind of merging the old me with the new modern me, and it's all one package. I kind of forgot about Christy the racer for a long time. And this year I was able to reconnect with her, and I've enjoyed the work I'm doing with JKO right now. They're helping to fuel that for me.
Excellent. Yeah, I just pulled up the Checkered Flag Living. What exactly is that?
So Checkered Flag Living is an LLC. I still am CEO and running my 501c3. That's a full-time effort. But Checkered Flag Living is an opportunity for me to have a platform to communicate my personal experiences and convictions in ways that I think could help other people that particularly are going through a hard time. My recent years have been a series of trauma that I really didn't do anything to treat myself for. And right before the pandemic, unexpectedly, my mother got very sick and died. Then shortly after that, a year after that, my coach, who I trusted in all my years of racing, unexpectedly passed away. And then it just 2 years ago, exactly this month, my dad passed away, which all of it was a horrible, unexpected series of loss, overlapping the pandemic. And with two kids in high school, there was no time to be sad and crying and figure out why I feel so bad. So I was what I would call like a high performing dead person, really. I was void of joy. I was full of fear. Every time something, triggered me, I would just shove it off. I would do my best to avoid triggers that made me sad or scared or whatever. And but you know I it's become unavoidable, and I finally got some really great counseling. I've binged on really positive podcasts for mental health, and my friends, my prayer partners, all of them have helped me get through this season of being in a valley, a dark, ugly valley. And I'm using the pain that I've endured and some of the solutions, and I'm still, coping with a lot of these things, to try to help others. And it's like a newfound purpose, that I'm engaging in right now, is to use this mental emotional trauma that I never had really understood until recently, to help the demographic that is growing, particularly Gen Z, that they're saying one in three have thought about suicide, planned a suicide, or attempted suicide, which really, really freaks me out, because suicide is only when someone's reached a place of despair and hopelessness. And that is a very scary place to be. And I've never thought of suicide. I thank God that thought never occurred to me, but I have felt so sad and scared that I just had every bit of power just to get out of bed and plan a day, get through another day. And life shouldn't be about getting through. Life should be one that is loved and appreciated and embraced. And I really, with Checker Flag Living, hope to help people who are in those dark spaces to get out, know that there are choices and there's help, and that people, love will embrace them. And just open your heart, open your mind. Don't give up. Don't make that decision that's irreversible. The sun will rise in the morning, and the sun is, I just, oh my gosh, my son goes to Pepperdine and
Grade school.
grade school. And just recently there was wildfires surrounding the campus, and I happened to be there. And it was so strange to see the out of control flames over my left shoulder, and then watch the sun rise over the calm, sparkling Pacific. And I thought, oh, how beautiful the sun, unhurried, unangst, on time, magnificent. And yet these flames, out of control, destructive. And it kind of reminded me of emotions. It's like, wait a minute, when you feel like life is chaos and everything's terrible, to turn your eyes to the sun. She's going to rise, and she's going to be steady, and it's going to be okay. Get through another day, because there's better days ahead.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's a very, very meaningful, outlook. And I noticed that you bring up religion a lot. I actually went to a Catholic all-girls school for most of my life, and then really kind of lost touch a little bit just with the medical field. It's just been too hard with working, and then it's often not emphasized, in the medical field, and so and when you're studying and I want to say my career mostly started in my early 30s. I know you retired. I felt like that's when I actually started to work. Before that, it was just a bunch of school, just trying to achieve my goal. But how do you, I like how you tie religion into your mission. And, and I read it on your website, that you attend Homewood Church of Christ and you bring up these scriptures. I actually used to read the Bible when I was little, when I was bored. I would just read it, read it, read it. And then now most of the reading I do is medical, just because I have to, maintenance of certification. But how would you tie religion that's very meaningful to you? How did that come into your life?
Oh, well, I was born and raised Catholic, and I think you can worship Jesus in any structure or on any beach in the office you're sitting in right now. That to me, religion doesn't save a relationship. And I believe with Jesus, who rose from the grave, he embodies the power of the resurrection, getting up and out of stuck places. So that's my choice. That's my brand of faith, is Jesus. And I like to encourage this because, and that's why I did start Checkered Flag Living, is because, over the years through the Heal United is, it's school focused, it's publicly funded. And so we're very careful to live within the rules of, well, traditionally it was separate church and state. So respectfully and gratefully, we do that. In fact, everything we teach at Heal United is all science-based, it's all medically sound. My husband, he could debate any scientist intellectually on any level of medicine, and he believes in Jesus because he says you can take all the sciences and it takes you to the cliff's edge, that at some point we're going to cross out from this life to the next, and there's unanswered questions science can't answer. And so you don't have to be less intelligent and choose faith. In fact, I find it quite the opposite. And I also believe that science is creation, and I believe God and the Father, Son, Holy Spirit created all things. So he owns science. Science has never undone my faith. I'm not afraid of science. I love science. So to your point, I think that also wellness today, World Health Organization, NIH, CDC, everyone is saying you really can't be your healthy whole self without a higher faith. So they call it spirituality. So now I'm safe to talk about spirituality in a public school context because science has proven people who have a higher faith and a higher power are healthier. Wow. Well, thank you. I now understand, that without that knowledge, I always felt so much happier knowing that I have Jesus, a personal savior that loves me unconditionally, that died to cover my flaws and my failures and make me whole, put on the garment of white, present me before God. If I die tomorrow, I feel like I'm welcome. And I am not living in sin or shame or guilt. All those things destroy the soul. So if you want to be beautiful, it's not going to be found in the latest awesome skincare products, which, by the way, I love. I'm a geek for all that stuff. I just love what you do. But I really think the most beautiful people are ones who have inner joy. And joy is different from happiness. Happiness happens. Joy can coexist with sadness because joy is linked to hope. So, for the joy set before him, Christ endured the cross. That's a scripture in Timothy. I think it's 2 Timothy. I'll have to get that reference for you, but I think that's such a powerful paradox, right? For the joy set before him, there's hope. Like he suffered for a greater good. And there's joy in that. So sometimes our suffering will lead us to our greatest experiences. And, you know, this crazy backflip that I just did, I broke my right kneecap, impaled my left quadricep that needed
Oh my gosh.
deep wound cleaning and stitches. I got a
Man.
double level cervical whiplash. And it took me 10 tries to get it right. And every single fail, I got injured. 10. And all within the context of 2 hours. So the story behind that I'm using for like some of my keynote speeches now, especially for Gen Z, is, you know, don't give up. You might be getting beat up, you might be hurt, you might be scared, all these things, but you could be one attempt away from the great achievement that you're looking for. And you know, your failures and your weaknesses and the things you don't like about yourself, they could actually be your most powerful assets for becoming the person that you're meant to be. And when you find out who you are in Christ and that you're loved, you belong, you have purpose, you have power, that's where the beauty comes right through from the inside out.
Excellent. That's great. That's wonderful. And you know, I like how you bring your husband and his faith into it as well, and how you prominently display your cross. I don't see that a lot nowadays. And so that really is very meaningful. Any last thoughts? Any last questions? We didn't get it too much into skincare, but maybe what you did, because you have very good skin for someone your age. You don't have a lot of sun damage. Yeah,
No,
given.
no, no. I think that I could definitely benefit with a visit at your office for sure.
Okay. Excellent.
But,
Yes, you're always welcome.
I love that. No, I also find it paradoxical with talking about skincare and hair care and all that. Is like when you do lasers, you're purposely in creating damage. Because then it heals itself. That's an interesting reality. But I read, you know, also, I think in the 80s, I had more blemishes and things like that. And I remember they would teach us to carb up. And that was how athletes were told to eat. Now we know that nutrition and exercise, and again, I like to speak to the young generation who's very frustrated and deals with, you know, blemishes and all kinds of skin problems because of hormone changes and this and that. All I can say is if you hydrate really well, the basic things, I think I got away with a lot of sun damage, and I have it, I do, because my profession made me sweat, which actually cardio workouts and sweat is very good. It does open your pores and it helps release the impurities. But what you put in comes out. So if you don't eat well and drink water and avoid the processed foods, when I say eat well, I want young people to emphasize fruits, vegetables, not cooked to death and, you know, covered up in butter and salt. Try to get clean eating going on. And what is that? Fats are really important for the skin. You want to have like all plant-based fats and also like omega fatty acids. So the fishes that have like cod or salmon, olives, olive oil, all those things, plus a lot of water. Eat your watermelon and things with C and A. All those things help with skin health. So yeah, exercise, hydration, nutrition can be a big game changer for your complexion.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you, Miss Christie. And you were excellent. I learned so much about you and admire everything that you've done. And You're definitely more than welcome to come to the office. Your hair and skin looks great right now, but whatever you want to look better, we'll definitely help you. But it's going to be hard to make someone as beautiful as you are to look better. So
Oh,
we
I think
definitely have to
a
maintain.
big hug, that would be the best. So,
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
thank you. You too.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.